Hello, Tucson. Hello, world. Happy Saturday. This is News Talk 790 KNST, Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream, all Green Talk radio show, where we are going to prove one more time that sustainability is a fun and informative topic. Today will not be an exception. Our in-studio guest is Dr. Michael Rosenzweig from the University of Arizona. He's the founder of the Department of Ecology and Evolutionary Biology. So we are so going to find out about that. And he's here. I can see him. He does not even look that old. So we have to find out how far back that goes. He will be talking about all the known things that he has done, all known things he's done. And trust me, there are many. So get ready to hear from him. I have lots of questions. As always, I want to thank and do a shout out to my sponsors. There's a debate about whether gas prices are going up. I'm weighing in on, I believe they will. It's just a matter of time. I hope they don't. But anyway, Chapman has a vast array of the most fuel-efficient cars on the planet. And it's not just because they're my sponsors that I'm saying that. You cannot buy Mrs. Green to say that. Don't wait for the prices to go up. Go take a stroll around Chapman, Tucson. Ask about their special offer going on for the 2010 Honda Civic. I am so not kidding. Zero due at lease, zero down payment, zero security deposit, zero first month payment, zero due at lease signing. And of course, there's always the fine print. You have to be a very qualified, credit worthy buyer, but the time is now. So I hope that you will go take a look. And you hear me say every week, my Honda Insight, literally guys, 44.5 miles per gallon, average in town, and I'm tracking it. Okay. The Fairfax companies. Thank you, people that have been emailing me about where is the Fairfax companies. I want to take my landscaping waste there because I believe Mrs. Green, and I know it will get recycled into green waste. And it does, in fact, get recycled into green waste. You want to take your landscaping waste as you're pruning everything this spring to the Fairfax companies. Just email me, info@mrsgreensworld.com, to find out their locations. Even simpler than that, when you go onto my website, mrsgreensworld.com, Fairfax is one of the banner ads. If you click on them, you go straight through to their own website. So thank you for listening and for taking action. I really appreciate your emails. Last week, I made the big announcement, and I want to make it again because I'm still so excited about it, that we are now the world. We are the world. We've gone from Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream on our website to Mrs. Green's World. Thank you, thank you, thank you for the emails, the supportive words, the Facebook postings, the Twittering about it. It was really, really hard to get that website launched, and I hope I never have to relaunch another one. I hope I can get somebody else to do that, but it's a very different feel. There's a great contest going on, but you actually have to do something to win. We want to know about what you're doing that's green in your life. Send in a green picture, and there really are some great prizes. My favorite, which I cannot win, is, I have to say I have a favorite, and I hope nobody else gets upset with me. There's two. One is the overnight stay at the Biltmore in Phoenix, which is, you know, I can stretch it. It's green because you're not flying, and I would take my fuel-efficient car. And then there's a solar-powered backpack from Tucson Electric Power, which is so cool, and you can plug in your cell phone or your computer for those of us that are overly type A. It would just be a really cool thing to do. And we are going to have a call-in from Randy Olson. He's the writer-director of the mockumentary Sizzle, which is showing at the Loft this Wednesday at 7 p.m., so we will be hearing from him in a little bit. People are emailing me about this film already that have seen it, and I want to know how, since it's not coming till next Wednesday, and I could only find a trailer, but they're saying it's a hoot, and he kind of makes fun of himself and scientists for their inability to articulate what global warming is all about. And I hope Paul, who won tickets last week, will be there and come and introduce himself to me. And last but not least, don't forget about Skincare at Savanno. And I change the words every time, Sylvia. I hope that's okay, but it really matters what you put on your skin. It really, really matters. There are a lot of not so good, nasty, some actual carcinogens in a lot of skincare, known carcinogens. We have very low standards in the United States for our cosmetics, for our children. It makes me, don't get me started. So Skincare at Savanno, you don't have to worry. They use organic, non-toxic products by a company called Eminence. And when I say safe cosmetics, trust me, they are. And you can visit them at Skincare at Savanno and be sure to tell them Mrs. Green sent you because I'd love to see her business flourish. So we are going to find out from Dr. Michael Rosenzweig. We can call him Mike, he said. There's so much here, but we are going to find out what is reconciliation ecology. I personally want to find out, and I don't know how to say it, and you can please say it. Is it predation dynamics or predation?
Predation.
Predation
dynamics.
I want to find out what that means. I think that we need to find that out. And I can quickly do the green tip if we have time. I have a great green tip. And I somehow took what I heard Dr. Rosenzweig say at my Rotary Club, and I maybe went off on a different path, but he can correct me if I'm wrong. Create an animal habitat wherever you live, no matter how small. If you live in an apartment with a balcony, if you live in a house with a small yard, just create a little habitat for animals, because it's a good thing you can do for the planet and for your quality of life. We did one thing. We bought a finch feeder for our front yard, and the habitat has been created. And I was talking off air with Mike, and I said, okay, so we have golden and red finches, which he named the species. We have quail and dove who eat the seeds that drop off. And we have a Harris hawk who sits on our Palo Verde tree waiting for lunch every day, usually in the form of a very slow dove. So we have the circle of life just 3 feet away from where Mrs. Green expands her world, and it's really fun. Okay. Also, one more thing. There are lots of really cool things going on in Tucson this weekend, like the Solar Rock Festival. Every weekend in April, it's rocking in Tucson. There are wonderful, wonderful things going on. I would love it if you'd go to my website, info@mrsgreensworld.com. Actually, just go to mrsgreensworld.com and click on events, and events that I'm involved in, events that I'm not involved in. They're all up there because we want to spread the good green word. And there are a lot of fun, free things to take your family to, your grandchildren, your spouse, your partner, your dog. I don't care. But there are lots to do in celebration of Earth Month. Okay, so we're going to go to break. You're listening to Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream, News Talk 790 KNST. I do remember the station. Come back, and we're hearing Dr. Michael Rosenzweig from the University of Arizona.
Because you never know what'll happen next. Happen next. Next. News Talk 790 KNST.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream, News Talk 790 KNST. Happy Saturday. I hope you're having a great one. We're going to have a great time today. We have a wonderful, brilliant in-studio guest. I am so serious. Dr. Michael Rosenzweig from the University of Arizona. And I have to tell you this. I have said this. I have regular listeners. You know I say this. But I have learned so much from my guests. I am honored to sit with them, to learn from them. I hear about them from all different areas of my life. And this guest today is really, he's an ecological hall of famer. Let's put it in why does everything have to be compared to sports, Michael? Say hello, but it's like, okay, put it in the language of the masses for me. He received the Eminent Ecologist Award from the Ecological Society of America. And thank God for Google, because you can Google things and find out lots. I mean, I looked at some of his pages, and there's just graphs on them, because this man speaks a lot, and he knows all about species and species disappearance and species preservation. So can you tell us a little bit about that? I don't want to embarrass you, but I'm really proud that I have a guest that's one of, what, 55 people on the planet that has received this award?
Well, 55 people, but most of them are dead.
Oh, so we have a live one. That's really better.
You got
even
one
better.
Of the few rare and live ones, yes.
We have never really taped anyone who's come back
and
from
I
the dead.
Yeah, and I should mention to my friends that this is, in fact, taped, and even though it's going to be broadcast on a Saturday, we're sitting here on, what is it today?
We're sitting Tuesday? Here, and it's Tuesday, and I just project, it's like happy Saturday, and it's so funny. I don't like doing pre-records anymore, so I'm making believe it's live. I will be up in Greer in High Country living the green life when this is aired. So everybody knows that, and so tell us a little bit about your award and how that came about, and when did you receive it?
I received it in August of 2008.
Okay.
At the national convention there, and it's a career award. It has to it looks back at what I've been able to accomplish over my life. So far,
because right. You're very young,
and we're going to be talking about something that I hope to see thrive and flourish in this community and in the United States in general, in fact. But those things had mostly to do with my activity as a researcher. Some of it was broad theory. And when a scientist says theory, a scientist doesn't mean guesswork.
Right, right.
He or she means mathematics, really, the language of logic.
Lots of hardcore numbers.
And therefore easy to disprove. That's one of the great things about theories. It's real, real easy to disprove.
And people are probably just waiting to do just that.
All the time.
All the time.
Some of them my own students.
Right. That's really good, though. That's lifelong learning. There you go. Ever challenged.
Right. But in addition to that, we started in Arizona, in fact, what has become an international program for the study of desert animals. They are extremely useful to study because the desert is such an unpredictable place that they've had to incorporate in their own psyches the ability to roll with the punches that the desert throws. Well, guess what? That's what our equations are supposed to do. Our equations are supposed to explain how it is that animals can adapt to so many different circumstances. All we have to do is to look at a desert kangaroo rat or a pocket mouse or a gerbil in Israel. And we can see played out in their own lives and the choices they make under both natural and experimental circumstances, whether those equations are right or not.
So and do you mean things like the extreme temperature changes in a hurry, and sometimes we have a drought, and sometimes we have flooding from monsoons? So do you mean, just be a little bit more specific about what they've had to adapt to?
It's the result of weather, but it's not weather.
Okay. Okay.
When you get a good or bad rain system, for example, this year we're having an El Nino system and there are going to be massive amounts of seeds. How should animals respond to that extra luxury of having seeds around?
Feast.
Yeah. But it's not just that. It's also their relationships with other animals, which are very often competitive and they're very businesslike.
Right.
Every single species has to have a niche.
I just don't think of kangaroo rats as being businesslike, but let's go there.
All species, they have to have a shtick. Yeah. They've got to be able to do something better than any other species. There's no free lunches out there for species.
Yeah, I do believe that. And it is survival of the fittest in nature.
And sometimes the fittest are just the cleverest.
Right, right. As in that case. Okay. So You won the award, which I'm sure is such an honor to you and to the University of Arizona. I mean, I comment frequently about I could do a show every week on the treasure trove, content-rich, unbelievable brain trust called the University of Arizona in just the area of environmental impact and all that that means.
I mean, you could indeed.
I could do one probably every day for a year because there's never a dull moment. So tell us a little bit about you. This is totally out of sequence, but I can't help it because I went down the rabbit hole of reading about what the experiment in Israel is, and I don't know how to say it. Is it the Negev? Negev Desert.
Negev, yes.
So can you, it said, we pursue the dream of understanding species interactions as the result of optimal behavior of individuals. That sounded like such a good quote for the radio. So tell us what that means and what you're doing with that or what you have done with that experiment.
Well, that series of experiments is over.
Okay.
And we are developing a new one right now as we speak. In fact, I could give you the code for the internet and you could go on camera and you could actually see in the internet.
You are kidding me.
No, I'm not kidding you. Some trained little egrets that are held in these fancy theaters along with ponds of goldfish, three ponds of goldfish. And we're trying to determine whether there's a joint optimum. In other words, we can figure out what the egrets should be doing in terms of when should they be trying to catch goldfish and which pond should they be feeding at and how long should they wait before they come back. And from the goldfish's perspective, we can figure out what they should be doing. When should they hide under the cover we give them and when should they expose themselves and when should they change from one pool to another pool because there's an egret there. Oh, no. Animals are just plain remarkable. They've taught me almost as much as my students.
Oh, my gosh. So a goldfish really does not just swim around. They sense.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, yeah. How do you know that? Do you have to think like a goldfish? Well, do you have to be the fish?
Well, that's the, you know, you just quoted one of the first lessons that I teach students is learn to think like the animal or the plant that you expect to study successfully.
Yes.
If you don't do that, you're not going to have any instinct.
I love it, and I agree with instinct, but I just thinking yeah. about thinking yeah, about just, thinking like a goldfish is really a stretch
well,
for me. That makes
job.
Sense. So they do they see their shadows? Do they?
Well, they we know that they can see the herons. We can demonstrate that's easy. But the next question is, okay, you give the herons a problem, the little egret a problem, and by the way, that's almost the same species as our snowy egret, which is pretty common on the Pacific coast.
Right,
so I'm
right,
sure
right.
lots of people have seen these little egrets.
I have seen them.
With orange and black feet.
Yeah.
They're hard to miss.
You're right.
And they have a problem. The fish have a problem. Each of them has an optimal sort of behavior. Well, can they... Is there a way for them to do things optimally together? Can they find a joint solution which makes sense to both of them? And that's our project right now. That's what we're doing.
And the question for me becomes, I know because of the research I've done, because I've heard you speak, that it all ultimately comes back to planet Earth and how we are all connected, whether you think about it consciously or not. So this research is important to me and my neighbors and the University of Arizona. Why? What can you learn from what a goldfish does and an egret that is applicable and is applied knowledge for our planet? Because I know that species are disappearing in record numbers, especially from the ocean. So is it pure science the reason you're studying it, so that you know how a goldfish thinks, or is there an application for humankind in that scientific exploration?
It is pure science, but it's also very definitely applicable. First, I have to start from the beginning, which is, why do we care? And if we care, then it's applicable. If we don't care, it's not applicable.
Right.
I'm not one of those people who believe that we have to save species because otherwise we're going to die of cancer.
Right. Yeah, I don't either.
Okay.
I want to save species, a lot of them, because I want to keep seeing them.
That's exactly right. That's one thing that motivates me.
Yeah.
And the other thing is a sense of stewardship. I believe that it's my ethical duty that God actually revealed that we're supposed to take care of this world. And that means the natural world. And if people don't believe me, they can go and look at the story of Noah again. Because it's there.
I so believe it. And yeah. I do believe it. And one, we had a great guest on, Mayor Dixon from Greensboro, Kansas, and he spoke of the same thing. Because we talk about the polarization that politics has caused, and he said it's not about politics. It is God's word to be good stewards of the planet.
Exactly.
And it's in all of the good books, yeah. whichever one yeah. yours is.
And that's absolutely true. I've actually talked to people from other religions and read works from other religions, and that includes Native American religions. I have yet to find one
that doesn't care. It just makes sense. I mean, you just really want to be good stewards. I have a friend up in Greer that says, "I love all of God's creatures." That's the one liner. It's a really good idea.
That's
I don't
right.
love scorpions, but that's okay.
So we've got these things that we're studying, and let's go back to the story of the Harris hawk.
Okay.
That you see now in your backyard.
Waiting for lunch. Yes.
Well, when I first got to Arizona in 1962, that was a rare animal. In fact, we lived in Ramsey Canyon.
Gosh, I know it well.
In the Huachucas for, you know, year after year, month in the summertime doing our work. And there was a hawk that lived there, and we never saw it. We never saw it. These were rare birds. So we have Cooper's hawks and we have Harris hawks in the city, both of them. The Cooper's hawks belong in the canyons, the Harris hawks mostly out in the desert. And these are birds that people treasure. They used to treasure a lot more in the old days when they weren't in the city. Well, they come into the city. They face massive challenges, which they are succeeding at. We run a very tough environment for a hawk like that.
We do. Lots of concrete. And am I getting the signal? Okay. We are going to take a quick break. This is Mrs. Gringo's Mainstream News Talk 790 KNST. We are interviewing Dr. Michael Rosenzweig from the University of Arizona, and we will be right back and hear more about our very special sacred desert.
Two points to make.
When you want to talk,
first-time caller,
talk to us.
The talk you love
on News Talk 790 KNST.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Mrs. Gringo's Mainstream News Talk 790 KNST. Happy Saturday, even though it's Tuesday. Hope you're not confused, but you get it. I do pre-records once in a while. And I really do hope you're having a great Saturday, and I'm sure I am too. So maybe we're talking about time travel here. Who knows? But I can already tell you I'm going to be having a great time up in Greer with my girlfriends. So we were talking about hawks off air. So we want to do any backpedaling on Harris versus Cooper's?
Well, we've got both species, but the one in the canyon is the Cooper's.
Okay.
And the one that you see in the desert is the Harris. And if I got that wrong before, I apologize.
Okay, and I didn't catch it.
And if I got that right, there you go.
They're a hawk. Both hawks.
They're very, very different hawks, but they both live in the city. What we know that teaches us about the importance of doing some of this work is what's happened to the Cooper's hawks in the city over the past 20 years. When they first began to expand into the city, their babies were dying at an incredible rate. This is research done in the School of Renewable Natural Resources at Arizona. And they were dying at the rate of 80% failure of the chicks. And they were dying from a parasitic disease that the hawk was picking up from eating doves in the city.
Okay.
Everybody thought, my God, the hawks are in a trap, an ecological trap. We're going to exterminate them. We're going to cause their extinction. And I said, wait a sec, 80% is bad, and I regret it. But 20% are living. You've got to look at that side of it. That gives them a chance to adapt. Sure enough, at this point, only a few hawk generations later, really, the rate of death of chicks from the same parasitic disease has fallen by 200%. So we're losing half the chicks, or the birds are losing half their chicks now. These hawks have made it. They're not only attracted to the doves in the city, they live on the doves in the city.
And they live on so in my neighborhood. Pretty amazing. Yep. And I've never actually seen the actual contact made, but we've found the feathers, so it's okay. Right now, we are going to go to our call-in guest and have to do a shout-out about him. It's all connected. It's the University of Earth Sciences. Dr. Randy Olson, are you there?
I am here. I hope there's not too much wind.
No, I think this is what I think when I read about you, that and this is dating myself, I think you are one wild and crazy guy.
And I'm in a wild and crazy windy environment at the moment.
Okay, so let's talk about Sizzle. First of all, I have to say it's one of the cutest posters I've ever seen. I love the polar bear. You are going to be here next Wednesday, the 31st, at the Loft.
Yes.
And tell us a little bit about the film. And I love the word mockumentary. I mean, I love people that can laugh at themselves because I'm one of them. And it's about a comedy about global warming. I've watched the trailers, and it did make me laugh. So just give us a little bit of a highlight about what we can expect. I'm so looking forward to it.
Well, for starters, it is a crazy movie. It's unlike any movie I think you'll ever see. It's a hybrid of three different genres. It's a mockumentary that is also part documentary about the issue, and then it's also part reality, because one of the things that we did is the kind of the core premise of the movie it's about a scientist filmmaker who is trying to make his own documentary about global warming, but he ends up with a crew in which one of his crew members is a climate skeptic who doesn't believe in global warming. And so we ended up interviewing a dozen experts on both sides of the issue, climate scientists and then some of the climate skeptics. And in these interviews, this particular crewman, one of the cameramen, ended up interrupting interviews and arguing with the experts and with the scientists, trying to tell them that this is all a big scam, that they're just trying to raise money and line their pockets. And all of that was total reality, and that's part of the fabric of the whole crazy movie.
Well, I literally can't wait. I have been promoting it every week on the show. Karen O'Hara is just awesome. And
she's the best.
She is the best. And it's on my website. I'm doing Twitter's tweets about it. Really, it's like it makes me laugh. And Randy, I can't wait. I can't wait to meet you. And just tell a little bit about it. It came out of a place of frustration from you, and you're being discouraged with scientists who have a lot of really good information but have challenges translating it to the masses. Is that a safe statement?
That's very true. And when you watch the movie, there are three voices in the movie. At one end of the spectrum are the climate skeptics who think that this is all a big scam. At the other end of the spectrum are environmentalists who sometimes have a tendency to overstate the facts. And stuck in the middle are the poor scientists who are just trying to get the truth out. And they are trained to be as honest as possible, but they're also trained to not put on a big show and not hype these things and not communicate with our crazy communication dynamics of today. And it's a lot about how their message gets distorted along the way by really both ends of the spectrum.
Well, I think that we are lucky to be having you and the film come to Tucson. It's only one night. I'm sure there'll be a great crowd. A lot of the Mrs. Green community partners are promoting it as well because they want to see what you have to say. Where are you anyway? I can certainly hear the wind. Where are you?
I'm in Maryland, and it seems like
Maryland.
There might be a
hurricane
approaching.
Okay, yeah, that's things like that happen. I like to call it climate change.
Climate is changing at the moment here.
Yeah, we've had some weird stuff. So thank you for taking the time to call in. They can go to Sizzle. Is it Sizzle the Movie? I have it saved in my favorites. Is it Sizzle the Movie?
Yes, SizzleTheMovie.com. And what's most fun about the movie is the discussion that takes place afterwards, because it taps into a lot of different things. And by the way, I hate to give away the ending, but the movie eventually goes to New Orleans, and we visit the Lower Ninth Ward for the 2-year anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. And it's very heart-wrenching, and it runs the whole spectrum, but it results in a very motivated audience in which I'm here actually at the NASA Goddard Center today, where we just finished screening it, and we had to cut off an hour of discussion after the movie for me to come take this call. So there you go.
I really appreciate it. I really do. And I will tell you that a lot of my listening audience are skeptics, and I respect that because I want to provide the forum. So some of them I invited to come, Sizzle.
And actually, let me say something towards that group, because this is now the only movie that really does have both sets of groups in there. And it has three of the loudest voices in the skeptics community. Mark Morano, who is the former spokesperson for Senator James Inhofe, and Pat Michaels, who's a scientist skeptic on the IPCC, and then Fred Singer, who's kind of the grand old man for their movement. So I got beaten up in the summer of 2008 when we released this movie by a lot of the climate scientists who said, how dare you allow these people to speak? But in the past few months, since the ClimateGate event, there seems to be a little bit of a realization that this is a large faction of people that are worth at least listening to figure out what they're saying.
Well, I, for one, love the premise because I think it's going to create some really important dialogue, and I hope people on both sides and in the middle will come out in record numbers. I know there'll be plenty of people from the Mrs. Green posse because we're all excited. So it's going to be great, and I cannot wait to meet you in person.
Wonderful. Looking forward to it.
So have a great rest of trip, and I'll see you a week from tomorrow, even though this is really supposed to be Saturday. Okay.
Okay.
We do time travel here on KNST also. Okay. So thanks, Randy. I can't wait.
Looking forward to it. See you then. Thanks.
Okay. Same here. Okay, everybody. You heard that, what Randy said. Come out and ask him questions. I love the debate. I respect it, and I can't wait. I really can't. And you and I were talking, Mike, about the treasure trove of people at the University of Arizona, and it is being co-sponsored by the College of Earth Science at the university. I mean, Kate Jensen, I told Kate about it. She said, I had no idea, because how can you keep track of everything that's going on at the University of Arizona? You can't, especially in environmental, cutting-edge environmental research. Okay, so back to you. We can do this. I would like to know about Tumamoc Hill and what's going on there. It's the bigger mountain
It's the Mesa.
It's the Mesa.
And that's just across the valley from A Mountain. Actually, A Mountain is in the Tumamoc Hills. And Tumamoc has a venerable history. It's the place 2,500 years ago which had Tucson's first permanent settlement at the top of that mesa. It's still revered by five tribes, including the Tohono O'odham in this town.
When the Santa Cruz was still a river?
when the Santa Cruz was still a river, and that's one of the reasons it's there. The archaeologists tell us that. We also have the responsibility for conservation, and we have the responsibility for basic science.
Right.
All of this stuff goes on that hill. It's hard to see. It's hard to appreciate. But we're going to try to bring that to the public as the years roll by with various kinds of activities. As this economic situation starts to loosen up and we can afford to do more, we will. One of the things that we are doing right now has to do with this ability that people want to bring nature into their own neighborhoods in a way that will help to avoid extinction, the extinction processes, which are much, much worse than most non-scientists understand. This involves not bringing one plant at a time into backyard or one bird at a time, but whole communities. And we ecologists don't really know how to design those communities to make them sustainable in people's backyards. We don't want to give them challenges that are even worse than the challenges that we presented for the Cooper's Hawks that came in and lost almost all their babies. We want this to be an easier transitional experience for them. So we're actually designing and learning how other people can design communities of native plants that will work together to support wildlife.
Okay,
in the city.
I even get that. So we are going to have to go to a quick break, and we'll come back with this one because I want to know exactly what kinds of things you're doing there at Tumamoc Hill. This is Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream, News Talk 790 KNST. Very short break. Dr. Michael Rosenzweig from the University of Arizona's Department of Ecology and eminent ecologist. I love it. I'm going to say it a lot. We'll be right back.
It's never too late to wake up your mind. News Talk 790 KNST.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream, News Talk 790 KNST. Thank you so much for tuning in today. We have a brilliant guest, an entertaining guest, Dr. Michael Rosenzweig from the University of Arizona Department of Ecology. When we last spoke several minutes ago, we were talking about Tumamoc Hill. And is there a little close to that? I want to know, like, when you're studying it, are you creating little vignettes of survival of the fittest, that kind of thing, because I like to speak mainstream.
We are, and we are doing it not for the purposes of Tumamoc.
Right.
For the purpose of Tumamoc, we conserve. We're the world's first and oldest restoration ecology project. We can be proud of that in Tucson. 1905.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that's over 100 years ago.
I got Teddy Roosevelt's signature on some of the papers that put us together.
That's a very long time ago.
Oh, it's amazing.
Okay.
And a great honor to be associated with it. I'm so thrilled. But what we're trying to do there is to produce recipes that neighborhoods, that property owners can take voluntarily and use in their own properties. What we're trying to do there is part of a movement that I call reconciliation ecology. It stops looking at the environment as an excuse for lining up and taking sides and starting another war.
Right, right, right.
Okay. And part of that is war between people, and part of that is war between nature and people.
Right.
Neither one of those is going to do us any good in the long run.
Right. We all lose.
But it turns out it requires a lot of science to teach people what appropriate things they can do for themselves.
Right.
And so that's what we're doing on Tumamoc, but we're already shipping some of that technology out. We're working with the Audubon Society, which is a great place for people to get involved. They have a restoration ecology program, and it does things with neighborhoods that are informed by some of the research that we're doing on Tumamoc Hill and in the University of Arizona. It's very, very exciting. And I look at this town as something that is going to literally lead the world. We are going to show people how much you can have if you really want to have it, and how much good it can do to save wild species.
And I have goosebumps because I love Steve Rosenberg's magazine, Biz Tucson, and I love the byline, Why the World is Watching Tucson. I have to say I really do read Inside Tucson Business from cover to cover, or my friend Alan's going to get mad at me. But in terms of the vision, when you read that magazine and when you are Mrs. Green interviewing people that are here and I can go around the world and not find people who are as cutting edge as they are right here, I think we just have to reframe the whole message of let's just forget about Rio Nuevo and focus on all of the incredibly wonderful things that are happening. That's my editorial comment, okay? I love it. So you're also working with schools, which to me is just children, our future, the only future we ever have.
They're also the way in which you can educate teachers.
Yes.
And teachers
and
are
parents.
And parents.
Home and parents.
And parents. And yes, if you want neighbors to be to understand and to be moving on their own behalf, then you teach the kids.
Right.
And they bring it home.
That's right. And they make it happen.
And they make it happen. And all of a sudden, something that was, oh, we don't have time for this, becomes, well, I guess we have to go to the store and buy or a rake or whatever it's going to take to do the job. We also have to applaud some of the businesses in this town, which are environmentally very, very aware. And I know of several, but I cannot think of one that is more deserving as a TEP.
I love that you said that. And I'm serious because I know they're one of my biggest sponsors. Full disclosure, there's a reason for that, because they really do want to make a difference. The thing that Betsy Boulding is doing in schools, all of their solar initiatives, I know a lot about what they're doing and the things that they sponsor. Talk about good stewards of the community. They know that they burn dirty coal. I think if Paul Bonavia had his way, he would wave a magic wand and they would have no more.
I'm sure of it.
So tell me why you love TEP. Well, this is like a bonus.
We're back. Yes, you were back to the hawk story. Those hawks and the great horned owls are big birds, and they get fried on TEP's power lines sometimes.
Okay.
Now, when that happens, just call up TEP, and they will send a crew out at their own expense to retrofit that pole so it never happens again. And all of the new transmission lines that involve poles that are being built around here already have those things. So one of the reasons that we are seeing hawks and owls in the city is through the work of TEP, which is fairly quiet, and they pay for it. I mean, that costs them money.
I had no idea.
Yep.
Like, I had no idea. So that's good. I'll probably have to blog about that now. And I will definitely include the information about you and being an eminent ecologist, because I'm so proud of that. Okay.
It was a great treat.
It is a great treat. It's just something. It's like 1 of 55 in the world, and he's sitting here right here talking to Mrs. Green. Love it. Gotta love it. So, okay, so TEP helps. That's huge. And I just have to tell you this one story, random story that just came to me. The power of when I was kind of joking about the goldfish, and I went to the Grand Canyon about 2 years ago, and my girlfriends were hiking down to Phantom Ranch, and I had a foot issue, and I stayed up, and I went to every presentation they had, and I'll never forget this, Mike, never. They talked about when the condor came back, and they let them, reintroduced them. Those condor went to where the nests were 75 years ago, the exact same cave. And I went up to the guy afterward. I said, did you make that up? He said, no, I did not make that up. But when you talk about the wisdom that's in them, in their DNA, so it's, you know, and to me, the connection is the hawks are coming back. They did survive. And I'm happy that some place like TEP is helping out and helping you with the whole ecological diversity or reconciliation. I used two words. You said reconciliation and restoration.
That's right.
Okay, so I get it. Reconciliation.
Reconciliation
tell us that one.
Means redesigning our uses of the world, of the
for
places
the
we use.
World. Okay.
Okay. It doesn't mean leaving it. It doesn't mean quitting or making a profit. In fact, in many, many cases, profits go up after you do reconciliation.
Right.
Sometimes dramatically. I'll tell you a story about a farm in Minnesota.
Okay.
Okay. We keep using the land, but we use it in a different way. As I say to people sometimes, it's time to take our jack boots off and put on ballet slippers. The careful foot can walk anywhere.
Okay. Love
and
that.
That's reconciliation. Restoration is more, in the words of Bill Jordan, an atonement for the misdeeds. And it means taking a small amount of land that we have abused and bringing it back into a natural circumstance and avoiding use it again, abjuring the use of it, forgetting about making a profit, forgetting about living on it. In a sense, it's a sacrifice to nature. The 860 acres of the Tumamoc Hill Ecological Reservation was the first such sacrifice.
Wow. 860 acres.
Yes, and the Carnegie Institution, urging of a very important scientist whom nobody ever heard of, named Volney Spaulding, put a fence around that place at 20% of their annual budget that included personnel costs. In 1906, they took 20 cents of every dollar in order to seal that off and turn it into the world's first restoration ecology project.
I cannot believe it. So did I get the sign? I cannot really have the sign. We are going to have you back. That's all. Dr. Michael Rosenzweig from the University of Arizona Department of Ecology. If you have more questions for him, info@mrsgreensworld.com. Thank you so much, and I wish we had two more hours to talk about all this stuff. I love it.
Very, very great pleasure.
Okay, thank you so much. I'd love to have you back. Have a great weekend, everybody. Happy Saturday. Even though it's Happy Tuesday, happy Saturday. And just go out and do something fun and green and wonderful for the community. Lots of free things. Check my website out. Have a great green week.